Odyssey betting insider Nick Costos warming up in the bullpen about to enter the game. But Donnie, a quick thought. Pitt hires a new athletic director, Alan Green. I'm reading out of the Post-Gazette. He was the senior deputy athletics director and CEO at Tennessee since December 2023. He was Auburn's athletic director between 18 and 22. They had some good things happening at Auburn in that time. Listen, of course, anybody who got hired here was going to have a good resume. The name of the game is NIL money. Money, money, money. If he does a great job in that, I think he has a chance to have a great tenure. There's no arguing, really, that I can see with the resume.
That's the thing that I think was Heather Like's downfall, too. I thought that Heather Like did a lot of really good things with Pitt Athletics. You know, the teams are in good spots, but she did have a downfall of when it came to making money and NIL, and that's just the name of the game now. Like, you have to adapt with the times. So, you know, I'm hoping that this is a move for Pitt that takes them into the future and launches them to heights that they haven't really reached yet.
Me too. Let's get to Steelers Jets. Let's get to Nick Costos, the host of You Better You Bet, Odyssey Sports Betting Insider. Insider calls presented by BetMGM. Go check out all the latest lines today on the BetMGM app. Also be sure to listen to the You Better You Bet podcast for more analysis. Just search You Better You Bet wherever you find your podcasts. Nick, I hope we find you well. What do you think of Mr. Let's Ride playing quarterback for the Steelers on Sunday?
I wouldn't say I'm doing well. For people watching on video, wearing my Yankees hat right now. Last night was like a three and a half hour kick in the junk last night. No one wants to hear it, a Yankees fan complain. But yeah, it was not fun for the Yankees to lose the way they did last night. Great job by Brian Anderson, though, in all seriousness. Great play-by-play calls last night on TBS. Yeah, Russell Wilson's going to play. Seems bad. I'm not saying Justin Fields is the long-term answer guy as a quarterback for the Steelers. I am surprised that coming off a win where Fields played pretty well, that Mike Tomlin's going to make this move. But look, you know, Mike Tomlin's never had a losing season, has won a Super Bowl. Guy knows what he's doing, so I'm sure there's a reason why he's making this move. I don't know how anyone who's watched Russell Wilson, though, play quarterback the last couple of years can think this is going to be an exciting offense, a more exciting offense than it was with Justin Fields. And I'll say this about the Jets. As someone who has, I've burned more money betting on the Jets than like the Browns have on this Deshaun Watson contract. This is like the sports version of Brokeback Mountain. Like, I can't quit the Jets. Bet them on Monday night against the Bills. That was 3 hours of agony. I'm going back to the well, though, guys, with the Jets on Sunday night against the Steelers. Like, in all seriousness, like the game might end and we all might just say the Jets are the Jets. The Steelers are the Steelers. Pittsburgh wins the turnover battle. They don't make mistakes, and the Steelers win the game by three. Of course, that could happen. There's no way anyone can objectively tell me, though, that the Steelers are a better team than the Jets. I'm not a hater. I'm just being honest. I bet the Jets on Sunday. Can't wait for them to lose again. Going to be awesome.
Nick, Vegas does work in mysterious ways, but I'm a little bit surprised. The last I saw, the Jets, the 2-4 Jets are a 2.5-point favorite in this stadium. Why is that? Like, what am I missing?
Well, they're better than the Steelers. And like, that doesn't mean that the Steelers can't win the game, but any objective power rating, which is how these point spreads are put together, like, will say that the Jets are better. And just to add a little more context, Joe, you know, the Steelers have an awesome home field advantage. Like, I think the Raiders game on Sunday, it's like 60% Steelers fans with the terrible towels. Like, Steelers fans are awesome. Like Heinz Field or whatever they're calling it now, like, the stadium is great, the home field advantage. So this line is implying that the Jets are at least 3 points better on a neutral than the Steelers, if you want to get Pittsburgh a healthy home field advantage. And look, it's just right. Like, whether Steelers fans want to hear that or not, it's the truth. Again, it doesn't mean that Aaron Rodgers can't throw three interceptions or TJ Watt can't wreck the game and Najee Harris can't run for 100. Maybe that can't happen. But not the Steelers can run for a lot of yards and win this game. But yeah, I think the Jets are better. I'll take the Jets on Sunday night, and I'm willing to be wrong.
Nick, how much did the line move based on the headline moves from earlier this week? Russell Wilson pretty much being the presumed starter, and then the big wide receiver trade that brought Davante Adams to the Jets.
So moved a little bit up. The moves are largely inconsequential, like 1.5 to 2. It is a low totaled game, so the game could land 2. But these are largely inconsequential moves. So a little bit of action on the Jets. But as the week has gone on, I'm looking at my BetMGM screen now. I see a 1.5 Jets favored by 1.5, which would imply that money came in today on the Pittsburgh Steelers. Again, this is not, it's not like 2.5 to 3. like numbers that really matter. It's not a huge move, but it just is noteworthy that the betting market, Donnie, has barely moved, barely budged off the news here with Russell Wilson in, Davante Adams in. Jets were always going to be a small favorite, favored by less than three, and that's where we'll end up coming up kickoff Sunday night.
Nick Kostos on the Sullivan Super Service Fan Hotline, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Nick, we all agree here, and I'm guessing you would, that the three division leaders right now are decent favorites to win those divisions. Bills, Ravens, Texans, Chiefs. That leaves three spots among many teams. Who are going to fill those three spots? I should ask you, who are the favorites to fill those three wild card spots?
Well, I can get you that like exact answer here because I can just open up and I can see the playoff odds. So it'll be obviously like the teams that you mentioned that are going to win their respective divisions. The Bengals, because of Joe Burrow, even though I know like, oh my God, like the Bengals are 2-4. How could that be? It's because they have Joe Burrow. Like that's the answer to the question. The Chargers will be up there and the Steelers have to be up there as well because they're 4-2. I think the Chargers will end up as a wild card team. I like the Chargers on Monday night against the Arizona Cardinals. The way the Chargers want to play, which is to bludgeon you with the run game, play great defense, and if you need to get into a shootout, you have Justin Herbert. Like, feels like a pretty good strategy. I don't think their upside is to win a Super Bowl. I think the Chargers are a pretty likely playoff team. I don't know if I agree on the Cincinnati Bengals, just because they're so far behind the eight ball now. Maybe we see one of these teams, maybe it's Indianapolis, emerge from the AFC South. Maybe if you think Miami can win this week at Indianapolis and then Tua comes back, that Miami can go on a run. I do think Pittsburgh, guys, is positioned pretty well at this point to at least be like the 6th or 7th seed and make the playoffs yet again under Mike Tomlin.
Nick, speaking of the Bengals, let's take a look at their matchup this weekend. It always seems to me, and maybe my numbers are off here, my thought is off here, Cincinnati going into Cleveland.
Don't say that about yourself. Your thoughts are great.
I feel like Joe Burrow oddly struggles when he's in Cleveland, whereas he's a great, great quarterback everywhere else, but a 6-point spread that the Bengals are favored on against the Browns. But I feel like historically he has struggled a little bit in Cleveland more than anywhere else.
Yeah, because Myles Garrett usually like plants him into the turf and you need a spatula to get him off of it is usually what happens when the Browns play the Bengals. So Donnie, you guys asked me about line movements in the Jets Steelers game. And you know, like a little bit, 1.5 to 2, back down to 1, whatever. This is a game that has had very consequential line movement in both directions over the course of the week. Cincinnati opened 4.5, went up to 6.5. So through 6, think of the math in the NFL, 3, 6, and 7, numbers that matter. Through 6, up to 6.5, after the Amari Cooper trade, Browns trade Amari Cooper to Buffalo. Then buyback comes in on the Cleveland Browns, pushing it down to a number like in between 5.5 and 6. 5 is a dead number. It doesn't matter. So 5.5 and 6 being in between there based on the juice means that like people think that we are exactly where we need to be. And if you like Cincinnati, you want to lay 5.5. And if you like Cleveland, you want to take 6. A handicapping philosophy of mine is teams can succeed well in the first game without a star player, because no one knows like what it's going to look like what Kevin Stefanski has planned. It's the second game usually and moving forward where they have trouble. And a recent example of this will be the Giants without Malik Nabers beat the Seahawks in Seattle, the first game without Nabers. The second game last Sunday against Cincinnati, they scored 7 points. Could have given them 8 quarters, and I don't know if they would have scored more than 7 points in the game against a bad Bengals defense. This is only game one without Amari Cooper. Give me the 6, I'll actually take the Cleveland Browns plus the points.
Nick, it's a juicy schedule this week, in my not-so-humble opinion. And one game that really stands out is Baltimore at the Fighting Baker Mayfields. He's an MVP candidate right now, Baker. How do you view that game? What's a good bet in that game?
So I'm just going to go ahead and look at the weather here just to make sure, because weather, like, I don't want to play meteorologist. Like, I hate this stuff, but it does matter when you bet totals. So we're looking at clear skies here right now. 76 degrees, maybe like 10 mile per hour winds. I'm Nick Kostos with your 2020 Sports Flash. So I say that to say that I don't think the weather is going to be bad to impact the passing games on Monday night. And I think you have two really, really good offenses here. And Tampa's on to something now with its run game. Rashad White's terrible, but they now have Bucky Irving and Sean Tucker, both like running the ball well. They scored 50 points last week on the New Orleans Saints. maybe looks less impressive given like the Broncos look like the 98 Denver Broncos last night on Thursday Night Football, but still, Tampa's offense is really good. And then this is the best football Lamar Jackson has played in his entire career, and he already has two MVPs to his name here. So my thought would be on this game would be over 49.5 with the weather looking good for Monday night with the Ravens at the Bucs.
Nick, as Joe said, the lineup for this week of games looking pretty good. Some good ones in the 1 p.m. window, Detroit and Minnesota, Houston, Green Bay. You get Seattle and Atlanta later on. That's also a 1 o'clock game. KC, San Francisco at 4:25. Of course, the Steelers and Jets at 8:20. Then you have a good Sunday night or a good Monday night football game as well, that Baltimore-Tampa Bay game. Two or three of your favorite matchups here, two or three of your favorite bets.
And by the way, Monday Night Football this week is another doubleheader.
Yes.
Chargers-Cardinals is on starts after Ravens-Bucks, which sucks because we're all on the East Coast here, and I have like a six-month-old daughter. Like, can't wait to stay up until 1 a.m. and like not sleep at all because my daughter is really young. Like, thanks, NFL. In that game, Chargers-Cardinals, the point spread is below 3. Chargers, a 2.5-point road favorite. I like the Chargers. I'll lay the 2.5 with LA. I think they're way better than Arizona. So Chargers minus 2.5 on Monday night. Guys, I'll take the over in the Lions-Vikings game. That's currently sitting 50.5. We know Aiden Hutchinson's done for the season for Detroit, a huge loss. And him and TJ Watt were going to battle for Defensive Player of the Year this year. And now Watt is like the big-time favorite to win Defensive Player of the Year. So no Hutchinson. Vikings off the bye. You would anticipate Sam Darnold and the Vikings offense having success. And I'll just say this about Jared Goff and offensive coordinator Ben Johnson. We've given so much credit, deservedly so, to Vikings defensive coordinator, former Dolphins head coach Brian Flores, right? Their defense has been amazing, the blitz-happy scheme. Goff and Ben Johnson in the last two meetings against the Brian Flores-coordinated Vikings defense, 77 dropbacks, blitzed on 57 of those. Adjusted completion percentage, 84%, over 500 passing yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. I think both teams will be able to score in this game over 50.5. And my favorite prop of the week, guys, resides in this game. Jameson Williams, get a shot of J-Mo ready for this one. He has been the blitz beater this year for the Lions, taking the top off the defense. We saw it last week against the Dallas Cowboys. His receiving yards prop is 46.5. Way, way over. Way-mo for J-Mo on Sunday for the Lions on the road in Minnesota.
Nick, you're unbelievable. That was another great appearance. We'll talk to you next Friday.
I hope they're all unbelievable. I appreciate that. Wishing you guys and the listeners Minimal Sweats Winning Bets the absolute very best of luck.
That's Nick Kostos, host of You Better You Bet, and he's the Odyssey Sports Betting Insider, or un-Odyssey Sports Betting Insider. Insider calls presented by BetMGM. Go check out all the latest lines today on the BetMGM app. Jack Ham, the great Jack Ham, coming up next. Nick Kostos is incrinculant, isn't he, Donnie?
He is. One of a kind.
Wow. That guy's got, you know, maybe the phrase encyclopedic knowledge is used too often. It applies there with that guy. I've never heard the likes of it.
I'd say that's pretty fitting.
Arizona Cardinals on a Monday night. For some odd reason, I'm fascinated with this franchise and this team. Kyler Murray's having a good year. James Conner's off to a good start. And Marvin Harrison looks like a star, and I even looked at their defensive numbers, and they're not horrible. Why are they sitting here 2-4? They played Buffalo to a standstill in Buffalo, should have won the game. They played Detroit to a touchdown. They won at San Francisco, and then they got blown out a couple times. What's happening, and why am I talking about them?
I think that's just the unpredictability of the National Football League there, Joe.
I think they're exciting to watch,
they
though.
They are. That was a team. Now, last year, they came in here and beat the Steelers. I would be very worried about seeing them again.
I'm like a Kyler Murray fan.
On the schedule.
I might be the only one, but I'm a Kyler Murray fan. I just like watching him play. I think it's fun.
He's fun to watch play. I don't know how good the player is, but he's certainly exciting.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
The game becomes even bigger, and it's already a big one when you consider that Sunday the Steelers will be celebrating the 50th anniversary of their first Super Bowl team, the 1974 Steelers. I was a young lad in Buffalo, Donnie football, watching, well, in game one. That was OJ's only playoff game in Buffalo.
And he was held to what, like 20 yards?
Yeah, the Steelers just pounded him. And then they went into Oakland and put it on the Raiders. And then in the Super Bowl, same thing defensively. One of the key members of that defense is on the Sullivan Super Service fan hotline. His name is Jack Ham. Jack, this is the first time you've been on this show where Ron Cook is not here, and I'm feeling sad about this. You?
Yeah, I do miss Ron. He's probably having a couple of beers by now at 12:30, I guess.
At 12:30, he's on number 9 at least by now, Jack. Thank you for joining us today. This means a lot. We have a couple things, well, more than a couple to ask you. Here's a hot take I had that I may not be very smart for, but you would know better than me. Most people think that it was the Immaculate Reception game that launched the Steelers dynasty. I would argue it was the Raiders AFC title game in 74, because you guys lost to them in the playoffs a year later. What was the game, in your opinion, that launched the dynasty?
Well, I think, Joe, you're very intuitive, because that 74 game out in Oakland, you know, we were a good football team in 72, and the Immaculate Reception will always be known as the big game. But, you know, we were a good team in 72. In 74 is when we had the draft of Swan, Lambert, Stallworth, and Mike Webster. And so that put us over the top. That's when we realized we could be a championship football team. And winning on the road, it's very difficult to win at the NFL level on the road, but it's even that much more difficult to win a playoff game. And in this case, for the AFC championship game to go to the Super Bowl, if you asked every player on our football team, that was a key game. No question about it. That put us over the top that we could be a championship football team.
You held that was a great Raiders team. I think we could all agree on that. You held them to 29 rushing yards on 21 carries. But the story I wanted to check with you, Jack, was legend has it that Chuck Knoll, who never really sought to motivate people all that much through conventional rah-rah means, that week he had seen, I think, John Madden refer to the Dolphins and Raiders as the two best teams in the NFL. And that week, during a team meeting, well, you tell us what happened, if indeed the story's true.
Well, we came in for Tuesday practice after our playoff win against Buffalo, and the Dolphins played the Raiders. I think it was like a 28-26 game that the Raiders won with a Stabler touchdown pass at the end of the game to win it for them. And you're right about the comments that were made about that game. No question, it was a great game, and the Dolphins were knocked out of the playoffs with the Raiders winning that game. But Chuck came in, and Chuck was a guy that could be a chairman of a company, a chairman of the board. He was never one for Newt Rockne speeches, but for him to come in front of our football team on that Tuesday practice where the whole squad was together, and he said, you know, they said that I was the two best teams in the National Football League. Well, the best football team in the National Football League is sitting right here in this classroom. And for him to say that to us, I mean, totally out of character for Chuck. Mm. You know how I don't think he and Al Davis and the Oakland Raiders were great friends to begin with, but he had an edge to himself about the Raiders, and he was, you could see the veins popping out of his neck when he was saying this to us in our meeting room. And to a man, I think we always would remember that one short speech that he gave us prior to that game.
Jack, paint a picture of that first Super Bowl win. I mean, obviously, people have so many great memories of all six. But I watched the YouTube video the other night, the Dawn of the Dynasty, and it was the narration of Rocky Blyer, which was great. I also didn't realize with, you know, how successful the game was for your unit, the Steelers defense. I didn't realize that the game had to be moved from the Superdome because construction wasn't done, and you guys had to play at Tulane Stadium, which was virtually a dump back in the day. They condemned the stadium a few years later. I had no idea of all of that.
Yeah. Well, exactly. I mean, timing of the Superdome did not. They wanted it to have that Super Bowl there, but yeah, and it was not a good day. It was a rainy, sleet kind of a day. But the thing about that game is, I don't think people remember, we played the entire second half. Jack Lambert broke his ankle in the first half, and Andy Russell pulled a hamstring. So we played with a guy by the name of Ed Bradley, and Lauren Taze were our two linebackers. But this was a game where the steel curtain, when I talk about steel curtain, I'm talking about the front four, I think really built their reputation, because the only thing we gave up in that game was a block punt by Matt Blair for a touchdown. I think if Minnesota was out there for you know, 10 quarters, they would not have scored on us. Our front four was so dominant against their offensive line. I think I made two tackles in the entire game. Joe Green, Ernie Holmes, and Elsie and Dwight White were just dominant in that game. And I think that's when their reputation as a steel curtain really started. And really, they won the football game. Like I said, it didn't matter who was playing linebacker or safety or corner out there. That game was won in the trenches, and our defensive line just absolutely dominated their offensive line.
That was also the game, from my understanding, where Dwight White had, I want to say, pneumonia, like a pretty bad case of pneumonia the whole week before. The story is that he lost 15 to 20 pounds. And you guys are wondering when you're warming up before the game, hey, is this dude going to be like okay to stand up? Not only does he do that, mm-hmm. he plays the whole game. He has a huge pass deflection on a Joe Green interception. That seems like one of the more under the radar sick game performances in sports history.
Yeah, he did not practice all week, but knowing Dwight, he was not going to miss our first Super Bowl ever for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And in fact, he scored the first points because he got credit for the safety on Tarkenton when they tackled the snap came back. Tarkenton couldn't handle it, and Dwight doesn't tackle, just touches him down in the end zone for the first 2 points of the game. But you know, we expected Dwight. We knew he wouldn't practice all week, and he was in the hospital, and then he came back and played. And if you knew Dwight, you knew that he was not going to miss our first Super Bowl.
Talking to the great Jack Hamm here on the Sullivan Super Service Fan Hotline as the Steelers get ready to celebrate a 50-year anniversary of the great 1974 Steelers, the first one. They say the first one's always the best one, right? Kind of almost no matter what it is in life. I didn't realize, I'm looking at the lineups going back to the AFC Championship game, Jack. Bubba Smith started for the Raiders in that game. I didn't even remember he played for the Raiders. That's unbelievable.
Well, that's when they would bring in different, you know, the guys who had problems with other teams, and Al Davis, as long as you could play. And at that time, it was at the tail end of Bubba's career, though. He had got an injury and a knee injury. It was not the same dominant player he had been for so many, many years, but he was on that team. Yeah. As Chuck called him, there were a bunch of criminals who were on that team, and but they could play some defense out there, and it was actually, to be honest with you, Joe, the most fun I ever had playing football was against the Raiders. And it was always a big game. It was always meant something. It was always a playoff game or a champion AFC championship game. And, you know, beating the Raiders and with Kenny Staver and that crew they had out there, you took a lot of satisfaction because you knew what a great football team they were.
You had two interceptions in that game, I'm noticing here as well. What I want to ask, though, here, Jack, is of all the defenses you had in the 70s, I've actually seen Jack Lambert talk to NFL Films. He thought your 76 team, and I'm assuming defense, was your best one, even though you guys didn't win the Super Bowl that year. What do you think? Which year was the best Steeler defense?
Well, I think it was the beginning for us in that our first Super Bowl against Minnesota. But our defense really came on in 76. Lambert's exactly correct. We were all peaking right about that same time. We've all been in, except for Joe and I think LC, a lot of us were like at 25, 26 years old. And we were probably at the top of our game. We had outstanding secondary play with starting with Mel Blunt at the corner position. So our defense was, we were mature enough. Bud Carson would give us a lot of different things that we would try to do defensively that he felt we could handle. And that just made us even that much better on the mental side of the game. And so, I don't normally agree with Lambert on too many things, but I would agree here that was by far, we lost to the Raiders that year because Rocky and Franco were hurt. But, that's part of the game. But no question, I think that if you asked every defensive player on our team, that probably was our best defense.
Jack, you've been calling Penn State football with the great Steve Jones for years now. You're seeing how the game has evolved. Do you ever watch the game, see some of the penalties that get called, maybe some of the roughing the passer penalties, and have any internal thoughts on those? And I would also love to know, I don't know how often you do talk to Jack Lambert. I would love to know what that dude thinks of today's football.
Well, you're right about the fact you got to be careful. Football is good. It's a physical sport. It's not the it's not golf. I mean, and so, and I've heard you guys I'm traveling right now, and the roughing the passer on the body weight of a defensive lineman who was not trying to drill the quarterback into the ground. He was just making a tackle. He's coming off of a block of an offensive lineman who's 330 pounds, who's trying to block him. He gets by him with momentum, and now you got to be careful of how you tackle the quarterback. Those are kind of difficult. You got to be very careful how much you want to change the game. I know you want to keep those quarterbacks healthy, but you got to be very careful of not changing the game. It's a great football game, and it's very physical out there, and you can't have that many flags out there and stoppage of play, because then you just lose the flow of the game.
About a month ago, Jack, Bill Cowher was on the CBS NFL pregame coverage. He named his top five Steelers defensive players of all time. I'm not sure if you saw this, but he ranked 5-1. Troy Polamalu, T.J. Watt, Mel Blunt, Rod Woodson, Joe Green. Now, I think there's a glaring omission here of the name Jack Ham. I think that you are in the top three Steelers defensive players of all time. How would you rank the top five if you had a choice of any defensive player in Steelers history? How would you rank your top five?
Well, I think no question that Joe Green is number one. There's no question that I think that should be almost a unanimous pick for Joe Green being number one. I know the players in my era, and I see a lot of the games now today. Troy Polamalu was just a special player, but Rod Woodson was a guy. I mean, I saw him play when he played at Purdue, and what kind of a talent he was. I would have to put Rod Woodson at number two. You want the top five, I guess. I got to be Mel Blunt would be there at three. I would agree with Troy, and then T.J. Watt. T.J. Watt, I admire him because of the fact of he is not only I watched him play when he was at Wisconsin, but he's got to this level and he truly works at his craft. I see his practice routine and what he does to try to get better. Once you get to this level here at the NFL, and then from there, he's continuing to just get better technique, game in and game out. And he is just a special player out there. So he would be in my fifth guy.
Who's going to tell Lambert he wasn't in Jack Ham's top five, Donnie? Not me.
Well, you know, I don't want to be, you know, I could go back in my era and special players we had out there. Bradshaw, he never got his just due of winning four Super Bowls out there as one of the top quarterbacks. But I don't want to be slanted and biased towards my own era.
I hear you. Here's the thing. That one thing about Joe Green is part of why he gets the designation automatically and deservedly, I think, Jack, is because he was such a leader and the player that people point to more than anybody that launched that era. But sometimes I think that part of his legacy overshadows what kind of player he was. Tell us more about Joe Green, the player, especially it almost feels like before the Super Bowls when he was just throwing people around.
Well, I don't think you go back to our first Super Bowl, Joe, and that's where I think it starts for Joe, because I don't know if everybody remembers that it's 50 years ago, but we changed our entire defense because of the ability of Joe Green. We played, a lot of players would know, a stunt 4-3 defense where Joe or Ernie, depending on the formation, was cocked in that gap, guard center gap towards the quarterback. And in fact, Chuck Noll brought Joe into his office and said, you're going to be this stunt 4-3 tackle, and you may not get the pass rush because you're going to get double teamed on every play because the center guard gap, they're both going to have to block you, which frees up Lambert, frees up Ham on a lot of the running plays. And Joe told, and Chuck wanted to know what Joe felt about playing this defense. And the thing that Joe said was, if it helps us win a championship, I don't care where you put me on that defense. So Joe wasn't concerned about getting sacks or getting, rushing the passer and getting, big plays in the passing game. He cared about winning football. And so that defense, which we implemented in 1974, was a big reason why we shut down a lot of those running games with Buffalo initially, Oakland, and then Minnesota in the Super Bowl. Joe was a leader in the sense of he knew that he was going to take on a different role, and all he cared about winning, and I saw that from the first time I met him.
Jack, who would you say is the most underrated guy from that set of defenses? I mean, there's so much love for you, Lambert, obviously Green, Blunt, the Hall of Famers across that defense, but then you think of names like Ernie Holmes, Andy Russell, Mike Wagner, JT Thomas. Are those guys that you think should be right up there, elevated with you? Like, these guys were some great underrated players?
Well, two guys come to mind. Number one, if you look at that tape of the game against the Raiders out there in Oakland, Ernie Holmes took an Hall of Fame guard in Gene Upshaw and just absolutely dominated him in that game. That was a big reason why they had, I think, 29 yards rushing in that game. He just played outstanding football, and he and Joe just were so physical right up the middle. Just people just could not run the football against those two guys. But the guy back in our defense, a guy who really, I think, set the tone for us is Mike Wagner. He's a guy that made sure everybody was in the right position. He gave bad pre-reads to a quarterback because a lot of times you get the read from a safety on what the defense may be. He'd give a bad pre-read to a quarterback. He did that to Staubach in the Super Bowl where he intercepted a post pattern. I mean, he was a smart football player, and he was kind of the glue back there in that secondary. We had some outstanding secondary. People could play man-to-man coverage, but we needed that guy that just, made sure on the changes, because in a lot of the Super Bowls, we did a check with me for our defense as well. We would not call a defense in the huddle. we'd wait till that offense came out on into their formation, and then we would change our defense. And Mike in that secondary had to make sure all those guys were in the right spot. So, yeah, there are a lot of guys who all the Hall of Fame guys on defense, but Ernie and Mike Wagner, two guys that just stand out to me.
Jack, before we leave you here, obviously you do your work with Penn State football. What a game that was. And it seems like, and I felt this way going into overtime, win or lose, that Drew Aller, it was kind of a grow-up game for him. What do you think of Penn State right now?
Well, I think that was a big game. Anytime you go on the road like that and beat a good Southern Cal team, and they got a lot of talent out there, especially on the offensive side of the ball. But for Drew Aller to, you know, we're down by two touchdowns at the half, to come back and dominate the third quarter. Our defense played much better in the second half. And you're going to have games like that with this new Big Ten. You know, we got Ohio State down the road, and we got Washington down the road as well. But, I think for Aller and for a lot of young players to win on the road like that from being behind, they grew up in a hurry out there in Los Angeles. And I think it'll bode well for us going down the road, because there's going to be a lot of more close football games for Penn State.
Nah, I got one more, Jack, and it's, are we ever going to see Jack Lambert again? Is Lambert going to show up at one of these things? Are we ever going to see this guy again
pop,
in public?
The crowd pop would be amazing.
He is a very private guy. He and that's the way Jack is. I see him from time to time, but that's the way he is. He lives up there in the mountains, and it's typical the personality of Jack.
Fair enough. Thank you, Jack, for taking the time today. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Jack.
All right. Thank you, guys. Take care.
That was the great Jack Ham. He's the best, isn't he?
That was awesome.
Do we see Lambert? I don't think we...
No.
Can you imagine a surprise appearance from him this weekend? The crowd would never stop cheering. Ron and I both agreed. You're a younger guy. I wonder what your perspective is. We both think that Jack Lambert is the single most popular Steeler of all time.
No question. No question at all to me. He may be not the best player. I mean, you just heard Jack Ham name his top five defensive Steelers players, and maybe he left off Lambert to
Jack
not show his bias.
Jack was being very generous to the modern day player.
He
has been quoted as saying he thinks Jack Lambert is the greatest linebacker of all time.
But Jack Lambert was the face of the Steel Curtain defense. Like, he would be the guy on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
But here's the thing,
with
Donnie.
The no teeth.
I know, but here's the thing. Much as I asked Jack about Joe Green as the leader, blah, 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 what about the player Joe Green? Sometimes I think the leader and the guy he was overshadows what a great player he was. I think that the Jack Lambert image, the raging toothless scowl guy, overshadows the fact that he was a great player, not just a great player. Jack talked about them changing their defense. They were also one of the first, if not the first, to employ a Tampa 2, which simply means you better have a middle linebacker with range who can drop back and cover the pass. Mm-hmm. Jack Lambert
was great at that.
Unbelievable all-around athlete. A great, great football player. So I just want to throw that part out there.
No, I completely agree. I mean, you go to you go to any Steeler game, you go to the game on Sunday night, you count up the jerseys you see, you're going to see as many 58s as anybody else. And that's also, and I don't know, maybe my dad was different, but I don't think he was. Every single guy from your generation, you know, you and my dad are only a few years apart, Jack Lambert left and right. You know, Jack Lambert was my favorite player growing up. I'm going to make sure that my kids, I'm going to make sure my son knows that Jack Lambert was my favorite player growing up.
Did Donnie just low-key insult me in the midst of this? Limits?
I kind of saw that.
To be his dad.
I don't think he intended
it. This is unbelievable.
He didn't intend it.
I mean,
Joe also takes a lot of offense to things.
I think scientifically, you are old enough to be my dad.
Scientifically?
But
like I'm some kind of guinea pig? They could perform sort of experiment on me?
But you get what I'm saying here.
I do.
People from that age range, they see Jack Lambert like in a different light than anybody else.
Yeah.
He's almost a mythical figure because we do never see him.
Right.
We never see this guy anymore.
No, he's Greta Garbo when she went into like exile. You know, you like a you know, a superstar who just disappears. And you're right. That just adds the intrigue.
Yeah. Like, if he would ever show back up, I'm not kidding, he would get the biggest reaction of probably any former Steeler. I think there would be grown men, probably my father's age, with tears in their eyes. Yeah. I mean, hell, I might have tears in my eyes.
I think he should do it. If anybody out there, I know Phil Spano over at the Penguins, who also has an unbelievable, he comes here with the pizza oven. Have you had his pizza, Donnie? It's absolutely incrinculant. You know Jack. Come on, Phil, call him. Steelers, call him if you haven't already. Get him here this weekend. Lambert. Right? Right, Donnie?
It would be amazing.
Huh. Amazing.
He walks out of that tunnel.
Oh, my God. He could play. Put him on the field for a ceremonial play.
He'd get a penalty. He'd hit somebody too hard.
He'd throw down somebody like he did Cliff Arrett. What if he did it to Aaron Rodgers? Oh, that would be great. Well, maybe that raises the question, who's the second most popular player? Ron and I agreed on that, or did we? Did we? He said Polamalu, I said Franco, in terms of just raw popularity within the fan base. He said Polamalu. He might be right. I said Franco.
I mean, I'm going to be biased to Polamalu here because that is a guy I got to see his whole career. I mean, he did things that we've never seen before and we've never seen after, like a truly one-of-a-kind player. Franco, though, such a great figure in the community, too.
I know. So it's a tough call.
Same like realm as Mean Joe.
Yeah.
Like, here are guys who were great in their careers here, but they stuck around. Whereas Polamalu, I mean, yeah, you see Polamalu pop up more often. He's still in those commercials with Mahomes talking about their hair and dandruff.
Tremendous.
But you don't see their appearances at the stadium, you know, like you may see the other two.